Ah, yes, welcome indeed, everyone, to the Aged Age. Great to have your company. This is RPPFM across the Mornington Peninsula on 98.7 and 98.3. The Aged Age, a program that looks at issues and matters affecting older Australians. Great to have your company. Made possible, of course, by the Village Baxter, the Village Glen, and Encore Living for that regional alternative. I'm Brendan Telfer. In the studio with me, your co-host, our co-host, is Paula Dunn. Paula, hello.
Hello, Brendan. How are you?
Very well. Recovering from a beautiful warm week. I think summer has told us that it's around the corner or arrived or something.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness.
Lovely. It's beautiful. Well, we hope that you've been enjoying the weather down here on the Mornington Peninsula.
I have. Definitely have. So today on the program,
yes,
we have the Council on Ageing, COTA, and their view on
the reform of the aged care sector.
And Alzheimer's, we're talking about Alzheimer's.
It's Alzheimer's Week. It is indeed.
Yeah.
And we're having a look at new technology and techniques there in Alzheimer's. It's the curse, of course, of those of us who are getting a little bit older.
Mm.
Also, a little bit of feedback from last week as well.
Yeah.
Care Connect. And there were a couple of callers who were a little bit concerned about Care Connect.
Yes, they
and,
were.
And their fee structure in terms of management. It's probably a subject that we will put a little asterisk against.
I think so.
And we might rejoin that discussion at some other stage.
Yeah,
we might even invite Care Connect to come back on and answer a couple of those questions specifically.
Yes.
But obviously, there was a little bit of feedback on that one as well. But let's welcome to the studio our guest for this week. We have Kim Jackson, Executive Manager of the Village Baxter. Kim, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Great to have you back. And he's been away. He wasn't forgotten, but he's the Chief Operations Officer. He comes from the Village Glen, none other than the Enfant Terrible, Peter Nilsson. Welcome back, Peter.
Pierre,
bonjour. Bonjour, Pierre.
Bonjour. Should have worn my beret.
So I suppose the first question is, you've been away, you've been in Europe, of course, it was a holiday, but knowing how driven you are and your commitment to this industry in which you work, did you keep a sort of an eye out on what the French might be doing or what the Europeans are up to, or is that all just a bit too hard over the baguettes and the beautiful Rhone Valley?
Well, I can't speak or read French,
uh-huh.
So that was difficult.
Yes.
However, when I got to the UK, yes, I did. I was in the UK for 3 weeks, had a wonderful time up the west coast of the United Kingdom, from Bath to the Lake District.
How beautiful.
It was wonderful.
How was the Lake District at this time of the year?
It was beautiful, yes, amazing. Never been there before, loved it, yes.
Beatrix Potter and...
Yes, we went, I couldn't find him.
No?
Peter Rabbit.
You were looking?
I was looking. We went to our house, but he wasn't there.
Did you have a couple of glasses before you tried to find him?
No, I was sober. He wasn't there.
Lake Windermere.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness gracious. It is absolutely drop-dead gorgeous.
It is. Yeah. Went to the Derwent factory.
Oh, of course.
Really?
Yes.
Of course, the Derwents are up there, aren't they?
They are. That was pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Childhood
dream to own a whole set of Derwents.
Meantime, Kim was down here holding fort.
She was.
At the village. May I,
before you ask me a question I haven't answered
Oh,
yet.
Please.
Oh, go ahead.
I was doing a travelogue then.
Okay, good. Loved it.
In the UK.
Yes.
Headlines nearly every other day in the national press about aged care.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
And what's their take?
Their take is that we can't afford it, it's not working, and it's broken.
Whoa.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's consistent with other countries.
Is that, sorry, Kim, would that be, do they have a worse case to answer than us here in Australia, do you think? Is their situation worse than we here in Australia?
Look, I'm by no means an expert. My observation is that in the UK, the nursing homes are much smaller, typically in country homes, and a lot of them are run down and there's no funds to renovate.
Wow.
So they clearly, like all Western countries, have an ageing population, and clearly in the past, typically government funded, and that's not happening now. So their budgets are very stretched, and a lot of articles, and in fact the articles I was reading were talking about in Parliament how the government have to get the message out that it's got to be user pays. We can no longer afford this.
Wow.
And that's exactly what's happening
here,
isn't it?
What's happening here.
Yeah. And we've had those discussions. I listened to the program online.
As you should.
Yes.
As you should.
My wife couldn't believe I was, but there I was.
We love that. We love the dedication. Well, yes. And that's good. And that's why we put it up there for you. And, of course, you can enjoy all of our programs, plus, of course, in particular, the Age Stage, wherever you are in the world. That's great. Mm. We'll get back to that in just a moment, I think, Peter. But, of course, while you were doing that, down at the Village Baxter this week, Kim Jackson and Stuart were looking after their open day, and that went well?
It was a fantastic day. Village was absolutely packed. We sold out of sausages.
Oh.
There were kids running around with their faces painted, display units full of people. It was just a terrific day.
Stuart would have been in his element.
Absolutely. He was holding court to dozens of people.
Oh, what?
Yes. Talking about floor plans and what it is to live in a village and, you know, just what you can get out of open day. You can see a village operating in motion. The residents there in the unit that I was in, I actually had a resident drop in to see me to say, "Hi, Kim, how are you going?"
Wow.
And he ended up holding court and telling the potential residents all the fabulous things about living in a village. And
you see, that was the feedback that I was getting when I came down to visit you as well, Peter. I mean, basically, when you have residents that are getting on the front foot and saying, "This is awesome, you need to do this." I mean, what better way to endorse your product than have the residents do it for you?
Absolutely.
What's the population, Kim, at the Village Baxter?
About 750 people live on site.
Yeah.
120 of those are in our aged care facilities and the rest are in our independent units.
Wow.
Fantastic. So you have a new intake coming through. I mean, how do you cope with in terms of pressure on what you have space available, Kim? I mean,
We have a waiting list.
Wow.
For our units without a garage, it's probably 6 to 12 months now, but units with a garage, you're looking at 8, possibly 10 years.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So a lot of the people that come in on open day, one lady came and said, you know, this is the 14th year I've been here and I've seen her for most of those. She drops in and she says, "I know I'm on the waiting list, but I'm not ready yet. But when I'm ready, I'll come and tell you."
And Kim, do people put their names down on the waiting list at a much younger age? Like, you know, what would be the average? Like,
there's different populations. Younger people who are the planners will put their name down early, and they're the ones that come in early, go north for the winter, have caravans, take off and use us basically as a mowing service, someone to look after the house for 6 months while they travel.
Yep.
They're the ones that put their names down early. And then you've got the other end of the spectrum where the people that really need to be there tend to make a decision much later in life, and that tends to be health-related or the death of a spouse.
Okay.
You better introduce a multi-storey car park or something down there.
We use the car park across the road on open day.
Don't tell them that. They'll be furious.
Oh, that's Mount Aaron. They're very kind to us.
Oh, they're all right. Wow, that's incredible. Well, congratulations, Kim,
to you
and everybody down there.
Every year at the Village Baxter, they have this fete. How'd the fete go?
The fete was fabulous.
They raised
sold out
a lot of
sausages.
Money.
Again?
Yeah, we normally raise.
What is it with you and your sausages?
It's a big thing that we would normally have 4 different sausage sizzles. We raise about $20,000. And when I say we, the village itself doesn't actually benefit from any of that. All the individual resident groups put on their own stalls and things, our two aged care facilities, their activities staff do trash and treasure stalls and sandwiches and all those things. And all the funds that are raised are used by the groups and the activities in the aged care facilities for things that make a difference to whatever it is that they do.
Mm. Yeah, Stuart tells me that the funds they raise on that day sort of spent over the following year, and it funds the year's activities, which is fantastic.
It does. It's fabulous.
Yeah.
Wow.
Brilliant. Well, congratulations. Mm. And if you want to get into the Village Baxter, then you better get down there and put your name down pretty soon.
Absolutely.
Hey?
Yes, yeah. Come on down.
Like during the MCC.
Yeah, it is.
When you're born.
When you're born.
When you're born, you put your name down.
Yeah.
I was thinking about. And what about you, Peter? You have a similar waiting list down there where you are?
No, I have a waiting list of about 800 people. They're people on my mail-out list who we write to every month with our newsletter. They're the people, like Kim said, the planners, people are thinking about the future, and on the day of their choosing, they'll ring us back and say, "We're ready."
So how old would they be, Peter, like now, on your waiting list? Would they be in their 60s, 50s?
The average age of those people would be around about 70.
Oh, okay.
And we really don't start to see them till they're 75 or thereabouts.
Yeah, 70's young.
75 to 80 is about the right
age. It is
age.
Young.
Mm.
I think it's young.
Yeah,
it is.
Yes.
As I'm climbing.
So The Village Baxter is quite unique, really, in our industry for their waiting list. They always have been.
Why do you think that is?
I think the Village Baxter is very affordable.
Yeah, it is.
And their, I suppose, the business model is not about making profits. It's a not-for-profit. They don't make a loss, of course, but they certainly see their brief, I suppose, as being affordable.
Yeah, housing. It is.
Would that be fair?
Yeah, we deliberately keep our most expensive unit, which is three bedrooms plus a garage, brand new, is $450,000. You wouldn't get a two-bedroom unit in Frankston for that.
No.
So we deliberately keep our prices affordable. We also have a philosophy that anyone can afford to live in the village.
Yeah, I've heard Stuart say that.
Have nothing, if you have a little bit, we will work with you to make it happen. And that's something that is part of our charitable mission and something we're very proud of.
But you would need time, though, to engineer that, to get somebody in, given, you know, the fact that you have these waiting lists, though. Surely you'd have, these people would have to work with you over some time before you could get them in?
They usually do. These are usually the people whose spouse has died suddenly. They can't stay in the rental property that they're in. And within a couple of months, we can usually find something that will work. We have a limit, of course, on that sort of thing. But we do have a philosophy that we will try and work with people to bring them in.
And so what about the changing demographics down here on the Mornington Peninsula then? Is that putting pressure on that philosophy as well, as more people want to come down here and start looking toward you guys? I mean, are they putting pressure on you and what you do have to offer?
No, we certainly have, you know, a couple of residents that could afford to be anywhere else but with us, but they choose us because their parents were with us. And that's one of the things I absolutely love, is we're getting more and more second-generation residents now whose parents were there and can't imagine being anywhere else.
I think I said to you a few weeks ago that I was at a lunch and there was a lady that I was talking to and she'd been in Cranbourne at an Aveno village.
Aveo.
And she said she was waiting to get into Baxter.
And to be
closer to her daughters. And she said even though where she was in Cranbourne was brand new and everything, but she... She's quite happy.
And that's one of the recurring themes at yours as well, isn't it, Peter? I mean, this emphasis on family and
community.
And the community.
Yeah.
Bricks and mortar are important, but it's a lot more than the bricks and the mortar. It is community. It is the caring community.
Just like this radio program, The Age Stage. You're tuned up to The Age Stage, and it's great to have your company this Thursday morning. Thank you very much indeed for joining us on 98.7 and 98.3. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll have more from both Kim and also Peter. Back in just a moment. And welcome back. This is The Age Stage across the Mornington Peninsula and way beyond as well. We're on 98.7, 98.3. Of course, we're streaming. We're on the apps. We're on the World Wide Web. And these days, our PFM in vision as well. We have in the studio with us today Kim Jackson, who's the Executive Manager of Village Baxter, and we have the Chief Operations Officer of the Village Glen, Peter Nilsson, as well. And, of course, you're listening to The Age Stage, which is a program that looks at matters and issues affecting older Australians, made possible by the Village Baxter, the Village Glen, and also, when he's here, Tom Camp from Encore Living for that regional perspective. Just before the break, we were talking to Kim about her big open day, very successful down at Village Baxter. And Kim, really traditionally, this sort of harks back to Seniors Week, just finished.
It does. Under the old days of the RVA, everybody used to have their open day on the first or second Saturday in October.
RVA, jargon.
Retirement Village Association.
Thank you very much indeed.
Sorry, yes, the Retirement Village Association.
Our producer has just
piped up.
That is now absorbed into the Property Council and is in a different direction. But traditionally it was associated with Seniors Week, and a lot of, we've been very fortunate the last couple of years, but many years we ended up with rain just being that time of the year, or it clashed with the grand final or the extra grand final that year, there was a draw, and that tended to affect crowds. So we've shifted it now, and there's a Peninsula Open Day that'll also happen in March.
March the 17th.
Well, Peter, you've been looking at this because you've got a very busy spreadsheet of open days coming up early in the new year.
So on the Peninsula there are 16 villages, and Stuart and I think 3 years ago now, we decided we should give another opportunity for more stable weather in autumn in Melbourne. So we came up with the concept of having a Peninsula Open Day, and the concept was really that for families on a particular day to get the opportunity of visiting all the peninsula villages of their choice.
No matter who the operator.
Correct.
So this is part of your collaborative business
correct.
Model as
this,
well.
This is our position.
You're not competitors, you're fellow travellers.
We are. So the idea is we all get together and share the advertising cost on a per unit basis, promote throughout the local press and the Melbourne press that the peninsula on this particular day is open. And for those families that are sort of thinking about the future, the planners, if you like, can jump in the car with the family and then choose and cherry pick the villages in the part of the peninsula they want to be, and then compare apples with apples.
Great idea.
Fantastic.
Wonderful idea.
And what a lure as well.
Not only
all of these places open, but also the Mornington Peninsula. If you're thinking about a place where you want to go, and of course the demographics prove it, don't they, that the peninsula is very attractive to a number of people. This is going to go off big time.
Yeah. So it's building momentum. So last year was good. I think we had 11 villages open of the 16. At this stage, we've got 8 definites and 4 more maybes, which gives us 12, so it's bigger again.
So it's 75%.
And there's 3 we haven't heard from, so I'm pretty confident those 3 will join us. So it's a good day.
You do realise it's St. Patrick's Day, don't you?
17th. I didn't realise that.
Mm. Ooh, well, there's a theme. So
well, there's a plus.
Get the green beer out.
Yeah, that's right.
So this is awesome. So then basically then, so we can then plan our day around this. Everybody's open and we can sort of tiki tour up and down the Mornington Peninsula.
We can, and we were talking before, maybe 3RP should have the OB out.
I think we should.
Outside
I think
broadcast we should. Jargon.
And indeed, outside broadcast. And maybe we should be at more than one place as well. We'll have a discussion about that.
Yeah, we will.
That.
Absolutely.
And I'm also keen to get these cameras out as well. I really do want to get these cameras out and show people what you have when we do these open days. And then have that put aside. So if people are just sort of cruising around and rummaging through our podcasts or our broadcasts, they can actually get a bit of an eyeball as well. And it's slightly different perspective, maybe not your corporate, but our pitch and our look at things.
Yes.
It might be just an interesting different angle for
Sounds
them.
Sounds great idea.
And typically on the open days, Kim, don't we have art shows? And
we do.
A lot, as you appreciate, in a village environment, in our communities, be they the village back to the village, Glen or all the others, there are groups of residents who do things like woodworking and,
the bowling green demonstrating.
But Peter, if you're being oversubscribed, I mean, how many more open days do you need to convince people that this is a good thing?
That's a very good question. You are so astute, aren't you?
We have a lot of repeat business. The people keep coming back that are on our waiting list year after
just
year.
Just to remind themselves of what is going to...
Yeah, to check in, see what's happening, see the developments
and
just
you honest.
Can I answer
feel
the question?
Good.
Please answer the question.
The reason we do it is because... The inquiry of today is the sale of 5 years' time. So clearly Kim's village is full. Our village is basically full. But the nature of our business is that people live with us for 12 to 15 years and you might think that that's their last move of their lives. Typically not, Kim, is it? No. Typically people come in as couples, one will predecease the other, and then the survivor probably will go into some form of residential care. So we get vacancies, 12 or so years on average after people move in. So we have to plan to fill those vacancies because our first obligation is to the outgoing family to pay them out, to give them the funds to pay for their aged care. So it's very important that we as managers have a waiting list of people who more often than not would want to live in our village, and we need to give them the opportunity when a vacancy comes to very quickly sell it, renovate it, sell it, and then move people in so we can pay out the outgoing residents. So we have a huge obligation, as it were, to fund the payout.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's the reason we do it. So it's clearly a sales and marketing exercise to keep a fresh list of people who may or may not live in the village, but we know who they are. And all of us have systems in place to keep in touch with people.
So we'll see your advertising campaign around these open days come up pretty
we'll
soon.
We'll start about two or three. No, we wouldn't bother with that until about 3 weeks prior to that 17th. We'd have a full-page ad listing all the villages that are open, what times they're open and what people are likely to see in that village for the 3 or 4 weeks prior to the open day.
And this, and for you, Peter, this would also include Tea Tree as well. I mean, you would be showing people through that as well, that facility.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Mr. Malone, I thought, covered himself in great glory while you were away as well.
Damien, did
he? Yes, he did.
Did he?
Yeah, he was very, very astute.
Mm.
Yes.
He was very good.
He's been well trained.
Oh, he has.
So something to look forward to early in the new year when we will be out and about, and we'll certainly get to grips with some of these open days as well. We started off just talking about you, Peter, back, and maybe a couple of headlines coming out of Europe as well.
Mm.
So you had a chance just to catch up with the Brits and what they were doing in discussions there. So you think we're in a better place? Are we more advanced in our thinking? Do we have a better model that is more adaptable to this tsunami, as you describe
it?
That is
probably not qualified to answer that.
Mm.
I'm thinking, and what I hear from our Minister Wyatt, and he would be qualified to comment, that in his view, and I don't think he's just saying it because he's an Australian, that we get it most of the time pretty right, worldwide. People come to Australia, certainly a lot of Asian people are coming to Australia to learn how to do it. So the Dutch have always been renowned, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. They've done aged care very well.
They have. But they've got a different model totally to us. In Holland, for some reason, the Dutch live a lot longer than the rest of us, don't they?
They do.
And usually they have high-rise apartment type, which we don't do. We haven't had the need to do that for aged care, but that probably will change as well in the
Although
future.
Although Vicky she had a high-rise option, didn't she, for her parents or family, didn't she? Previous host Vicky Barber.
Yep.
There was a high-rise apartment that she had booked into in Carlton.
Yeah, I don't think it's too long in Melbourne before there's a high-rise with a village on some levels, and within the same building would be.
Yeah, Australian Unity are converting their old headquarters.
That's true, they are.
Yeah, my dad was in high-rise when he went from what was low care to high care in Coppin.
And the Americans do that really well and have done it for a long time, but it's for a particular market.
Yes, it is.
You need to be able to afford to pay for it.
And again, it puts us, and it's a very different market as well, and a different outlook and philosophy to what you guys are offering down here on the Mornington Peninsula, because surely it is what you see out the window that is part of the big sell as well, is it not?
Yeah,
absolutely.
That view, the sea in the background, or the parrots in the trees, or whatever it is. Interesting times and interesting spaces.
So,
getting back to my trip, I was surprised, to say the least, to read the headlines I was reading, because if you remember, when I left Australia, which was on the 31st of August, that was sort of the tail end of that six-week period of the Aveo expose, the Four Corners thing, and everyone thought the world was coming to an end in our sector. And I thought, oh, how bad is this? But clearly, worldwide, to do with funding, there is major issues and there's major challenges. And I think what we're doing with the RLC's 8-point plan, Kim, and what we're working on with governments, with residents' associations in Victoria and Australia-wide, to address the issues that was raised in the Four Corners, there were some issues that needed addressing, I think. We thought, basically, a lot of it was bad reporting, but there were some issues that certainly needed addressing, and we're going a long way towards doing that. And I haven't read anything since I got back.
Aged care was back in the news on the weekend, but not retirement living.
And just very quickly, one other headline before we let you both go. Mr. Tune was down at the Village Baxter the other day as well. And he's the guy, of course, who was responsible for this review, which has now been submitted into the Australian government. Any headlines we could get out of that, Kim, that we should know about, you can disclose? You're in the cone of silence.
We are. The report's now public.
Okay.
And there's two recommendations the government has been quite vocal that they won't adopt, and that's to do with the price of the family home being included in assets and getting rid of the lifetime cap. But other than that, they're open to all the other suggestions, which
and
is...
About 38 of them altogether.
Absolutely.
I think 36 they're going to enact as well.
Yeah.
So it was great that you got to see him firsthand down here at the Village Baxter. It would have been very, very interesting.
We were blessed because his report was released about 6 weeks ago, and we are the first group, our little consortium, he's spoken to Australia-wide. So,
we punch above our weight. You're definitely punching him. And that's why you're in here every week.
Yes. Exactly.
In the age stage, because we're getting the scoop here as well. But indeed, well, next time Mr. Tune comes down, would you mind inviting him in here? And we would love to have a chat to him.
Absolutely. Mm.
And maybe even the minister at one stage. We could maybe even do a special forum or something like that. Would be very, very interesting, I think.
Yeah.
Kim.
May I make a plug?
Please.
Last Friday, a little while ago, the the Standards Agency Australia-wide, which is a government body, they appoint, that they actually give prizes for excellence. And Tea Tree got two prizes, and we got awarded them by the minister last Friday.
Congratulations.
Fantastic.
So it was fantastic. And one of them was for innovation, which we're all about innovation, and the other one was to do with care. So we were thrilled to have that. And at that meeting, Stuart suggested that I should ask the Aged Care Agency, would they like to come to our next consortium meeting, which is, I think, currently the 7th of December. And so I said to the CEO of the Standards Agency, would he be able to send one of his staff? He said, no, I won't. I'll come.
Wow.
Oh,
so
wow.
We've got the CEO. Yeah. So maybe we should do a program.
From Studio 3?
Yeah.
Or we come out to your Tea Tree and enjoy his company out there. Food for thought.
Because that's the government-appointed agency to make sure in the residential aged care sector.
The regulator.
In essence.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So we had the CEO and we had the director, independent director of the, which is very good.
It is very good. And we had a very successful village-based open day as well. The sun is shining on us down here on the Mornington Peninsula. Kim, thank you so much indeed for joining us today.
Thanks, Jackson.
Thank you.
Executive Manager of Village Baxter and, of course, Chief Operations Officer at the Village Glen, Peter Nilsson. Thank you very much indeed. Welcome back, Peter. Lovely to have you back here in the studio with us. Take care, you too. We'll see you very, very soon.
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Bye.
This is the Aged Age on RPPFM. Thank you very much indeed for your company. And when we come back on the other side of the break, we're going to be talking Alzheimer's, technology and latest developments as far as Alzheimer's is concerned. Stick around. We'll be back with more after this. And this is RPPFM across the Mornington Peninsula on 98.7 and 98.3. Great to have your company this Thursday morning. You're listening to The Age Stage, of course, a program made possible by our friends at Village Baxter, the Village Glen and Encore Living, a program that looks at issues and matters concerning older Australians. Two major conferences are underway this week that are looking at the issue of mental health. Melbourne is hosting them. I'm delighted to say that we can welcome to the Age Stage Dr. David Sykes, General Manager of Learning and Development with Alzheimer's Australia. David, welcome to our program.
Thank you very much, Brendan, and it's a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
Alzheimer's Australia, you're doing a great deal of work, and probably more is necessary as well if the figures are to be believed.
Yes, look, sadly there's over 400,000 Australians currently living with dementia and without a cure. That's expected to rise significantly over the coming years, as I'm sure there's many of your listeners are aware of those figures that are now often out there. And we have a major challenge for our community and families and indeed the people living with dementia themselves.
The fact that the figures are out there, does that mean that your work is beginning to succeed? You're making us aware of some of the issues that we need to confront, if not personally, then perhaps as a family?
Look, I'd like to say yes, Brendan, but we just did a recent study of over 1,000 Australians on their views on dementia. And look, sadly, there's still a lot of confusing understandings about people not realising that Alzheimer's is a form of dementia, people being still quite afraid and reticent when they understand that someone might have dementia about even approaching them, talking with them. So a lot of that sits behind that, unfortunately, the experience then for someone living with dementia and their families and carers is they often leave very isolated and limited lives as a consequence. When that's not necessarily a result of the condition, but again, a result of the response of our community to people living with dementia.
So, David, what are some of the first things we notice? Okay, we all have this little quip as we're getting older about, oh, I'm having a senior's moment, I forgot my keys, I did this or did that. But what are some of the glaringly obvious?
Look, probably some of the more glaring obvious things are really difficulty, the common one we talk about is, you know, it's not that you've forgotten where you left your car keys, it's that you've forgotten that you actually even have a car or can drive. So we all have busy lives. We all have put huge demands on our working memory to make sure we remember a whole range of things, and we all naturally forget things at any stage in our life. But it's And of course, dementia isn't solely about memory. It can be about changes in personality and mood. And so depending on the type of dementia, it can affect different people differently. And interestingly, certainly we had a speaker out here last month as part of Dementia Awareness Month. The point he was making about dementia is that if we can stop thinking about it as memory loss, but rather think about it as the capacity to retrieve our memories. So the memories are still there. It's our capacity to actually retrieve those. And so they're never gone. And you'll hear people, if you talk to someone who's living with dementia, sometimes they'll be able to recall things on one day that they can't another.
Yes.
But if I think of, certainly someone I know quite close at the moment, so she's in her 70s, but she feels that she's living at home with her parents, who have obviously long deceased. But that's, a really good, clear indication that obviously there is some difficulties with her retrieving memories that are more recent than that. So she's not recalling that she was married and that she's got grown-up children, one of whom she now refers to as someone she went to school with, not recognising her as, in fact, one of her daughters.
Wow.
Yes, it's a tragic circumstance, isn't it? David, I'm just wondering then, if it's a retrieval issue, is there an intervention, a medical technological intervention, which is going to allow us to one day circumvent that blockage in memory and allow us to basically realise the memory through some technological intervention?
Look, not at this time. Look, there's obviously still a huge amount of research going on currently into dementia, and in fact one of the conferences in Melbourne this week is specifically a research conference that brought all of the researchers from across the country together to really share their findings on the research space. But there's certainly nothing in that technology space currently that's really looking to address that. It's more looking at what sort of chemical interventions, for want of a better word, can be help with some of those issues that arise from someone living with dementia. And certainly the researchers will tell you that dementia is very much in the order of something like cardiovascular disease.
Mm.
So there's a multifactorial thing, that there isn't going to necessarily be one drug, one treatment, no more than there is for cardiovascular. So you'll have things that treat cholesterol, you'll have things that will treat blood pressure, all of which are things, by the way, that can add to your risk of dementia. So we know what's good for the body is good for the mind. So increasingly, as we put these pieces together, we recognise that actually they're all interconnected. And that's not to say that, dementia is a natural part of ageing, and that's a great myth in our community as well, that, I'll get older, so I'm probably going to get dementia. Well, that's not right at all.
Mm.
Your risk is probably greater, yes, but certainly it's not a natural part of the ageing process.
Yeah.
And the other point, I guess, to make about the whole cognition thing is obviously there's been a lot more focus in recent times on things like neuroplasticity, how the mind is an incredible piece of the body that we still know so little about, but increasingly recognise that it's very malleable and adaptable. And look, sadly, in the dementia space, people can sometimes latch onto that and think, oh, so we could train our brain to overcome the deficits that come with dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And look, whilst neuroplasticity has great benefits and great understandings, it's not something that's going to reverse the consequences of something like dementia for us, sadly.
So, David, does research tell us some of the things that we should be doing, before even, detecting dementia or
absolutely. So the most standout things that research tells us is exercise is one of the most critical things, keeping yourself active and exercising regularly is a really important thing that comes through a lot of the research that's been done here and internationally.
And do you mean exercising your brain?
No,
as well as the physical,
but certainly the brain as well, as part of that. And when I say that, that's really about you know, creating new neuronal pathways through things like, you know, it's not just doing, we often get asked this question, so if I do a lot of Sudoku, does that help?
Yeah.
Well, it probably helps you get better at Sudoku, but it doesn't necessarily actually improve your brain functioning a lot beyond, I mean, it's a great thing to do, but it's not actually creating, causing your brain to create different neuronal pathways to think differently about something.
No, that's
right.
So
if I give the example of something like, if you're learning another language.
Exactly.
Or if you're learning a musical instrument, they're probably the two kind of obvious things that cause you to have to think differently about something and are actually getting your brain to work in a different way.
So encouraging us as we age to learn something new.
Absolutely.
Is what creates those new neuro pathways.
Yeah, look, that's right.
Yep.
And the more people can do that and embrace that, that is absolutely key. The other thing we encourage is healthy eating, healthy diet is the critical part of the whole piece as well. So the more you're doing those things in your life, the better, because really the research trajectory at the moment is we're probably going to reach a point where you might be able to get an indication that you may have dementia before there is actually treatment options available. So we'll be confronted as a society with, do you want to know?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you want to know that you may develop dementia? The part of the challenge with that is that you might get picked up that you've got a high level of amyloid in your brain, which is what generally happens to someone living with dementia, and that build-up of amyloid affects the cognition and capacity for the brain to work properly. But people can have a high level of amyloid and never develop the symptoms of dementia. So it's not a guarantee that that's where you're going to land, and I think this is probably one of the great challenges that's going to face our community in the not-too-distant future without a breakthrough on the treatment front.
David, a couple of major conferences in Melbourne this week. Where are we placed in terms of biomedical research? How are we placed here in Australia in terms of what we're doing with Alzheimer's and other dementias?
Look, we're certainly one of the world leaders in some of the major research groups based in Australia and particularly in Melbourne. So we're very fortunate here to have them, I guess, really at the forefront of a lot of the research that's currently occurring in that space. So Melbourne's often host to research conferences of this nature, and this week is no exception. The addition to that, of course, is we're holding the Alzheimer's Australia National Dementia Biennial Conference here as well. So we've chosen to actually bring the two together so there can be, if you like, a mixing of the research community with people living with dementia and those supporting them, both from family perspective but also health professionals as well. And we're hoping that actually helps to make sure the research is informed by the lived experience of those people living with dementia.
Dr. David Sykes, General Manager of Learning and Development with Alzheimer's Australia, thank you very much indeed. Sounds like you've got a very busy week, and we thank you so much from all of us down here at the Age Stage for spending a few moments with us.
Thanks, David.
My pleasure. And look, just a closing comment is where there is an oration on hearing loss and dementia that is a free public event on the Thursday evening. So I would encourage any of your listeners, if you're interested, you're most welcome to attend. I know it's not next to Mornington, but would certainly encourage you to come along and hear the visiting speaker from overseas on that subject.
Fantastic. Where and when again, David?
So that is at the Melbourne Convention and Exhibition Centre, Thursday evening, 5:30 till 7, and it's free admission. You don't need to register. You can just turn up for that, and we would welcome anyone who's interested in that whole emerging area around hearing loss and dementia, which we really haven't spoken to today, but is certainly something which there is a growing level of interest in.
Dr. David Sykes, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the Age Stage, and good luck with the conference.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, David.
RPPFM across the Mornington Peninsula. Thursday morning it is, and this is The Age Stage, a program made possible by our friends at the Village Baxter, the Village Glen, Encore Living, and we thank you and we thank them very much indeed for being with us this Thursday morning. I'm Brendan Telfer. In the studio with me is Paula Dunn. A couple of weeks ago on the Age Stage, we came across Tom Camp, who told us of some pretty alarming figures in terms of the ageing Australian population, where to, where we're going by 2054. If you haven't heard the figures already, Australian over 65 population will jump from the current 3.5 million to 9 million. Currently, 1.3 million Australians rely on government-funded aged care, costing $20 billion annually. A gentleman who's coming to grips with these figures, especially in light of a new report just released by David Tune, is Ian Yates, who's Chief Executive Officer of COTA, the Council of Ageing. And Ian Yates is on the line. Ian, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
Ian, these are alarming figures. These would be figures that you as a group have to come to terms with pretty much on a daily basis, I would imagine.
These are certainly figures that we need to take full account of as we think about policy and planning into the future. But I caution against us seeing them as being too alarming. Getting older and having large proportions of our population living a lot longer is in fact a major human achievement. And we should be really proud of ourselves for having a population that is ageing and with older people in heavily engaged in everything from continuing to work to being volunteers to being active contributors in their community and making a difference throughout the later years of their lives.
Indeed. That there's a couple of assumptions in that, though, that they can be and that we can be completely engaged and have the physical and the mental capacity to be that engaged.
Well, certainly what we are seeing is a much greater emphasis in aged care and support services on the fact that instead of assuming that when something goes a little wrong in your life that you're now on some kind of slippery slope of dependence, to saying, well, no, we can take a restorative and a reablement approach and see quickly how we can address that issue in your life. And the fact that we haven't historically done that is because we really still have some very ageist assumptions about getting older in our community, that there's a kind of best-by date that we have, and then after that, really, you're on a slippery slope or you're past it, and we have a whole lot of colloquialisms like that. So that's where our aged care services need to move, and that's why we want more support in the community and for people at home rather than necessarily assuming that aged care is residential aged care. But certainly the figures that you quote are a challenge to the whole community. But let's remember that those figures were for people over 65, and something like a quarter of people between 65 and 70 now are still actively in the workforce. Mm-hmm. And that figure will continue to grow. It would grow faster if we could get rid of age discrimination, and that's an issue we're talking about with the government. But in terms of aged care costs, yes, there's a challenge because the gross numbers will go up, and we need to recognise that aspects of aged care are about people continuing to live their lives and pay for it as they have for all the rest of their lives, but with some focused support.
Yes, Ian, we hear about we're being encouraged as older citizens to stay, to sell up our homes to make way for younger people to have room for their growing families, etc. And then we're being told, by, on the other hand, to keep working. It gets very confusing as an ageing person. Would you not agree?
I think there are some very mixed messages out there, and partly we're encouraged, partly our response to that has been to encourage governments to take a more holistic attitude to the ageing population and get their right arm and their right and their left arm talking the same kind of language. But let's be clear. I would just say for most people, being 65 is not about being old and needing care. You know, the average age of entry into a residential care facility is mid-80s and going upwards. the average age of starting to use significant numbers of home care services is about 80 and moving upwards. People are very active in community for many years after what we've traditionally seen as a retirement age. And indeed, we don't have a thing called a retirement age in Australia legally anymore, mm-hmm. unless you're a judge. So, you know, it is about rethinking, as I said, our attitude to ageing and recognising, you know, we are in a later stage of life thinking about things like what's your appropriate housing and do you want to make some decisions about where you want to live that you might want to live for the last 20 years or so of your life. That's a good thing to be thinking about.
Mm. It is, but you have a conundrum, do you not, Ian? I mean, here we are, a volunteer organisation down on the Mornington Peninsula, and as you say, you've really got to tackle this issue about age discrimination. We see it here almost on a weekly basis. We have some profoundly qualified people coming into, I'm glad to say, this wonderful radio station doing some profoundly brilliant stuff, yet they are not getting any traction within the workspace. They are 64, they are 65, they're coming to us on New Start. We will take them. We will take them any day of the week. But industry generally, commerce generally, is not understanding the wealth of talent that these people have.
I agree with that. I think we're in a very strange situation where there are more and more people who are recognising the value of older workers, and we see more of them employed in a wider range of professions and industries than it was the case before. But you have also the reaction that you've pointed to, which people talk to us about really certainly every week and often on a daily basis. And even just now, we've seen the release of a regional Australia Institute report that points to the economic and social benefits of greater employment of people in their 60s and 70s in regional Australia. Mm. And it's a matter of government thinking, well, how can we facilitate that? But also it's time that government took a bit of a really major social advertising campaign against age discrimination.
It absolutely is, as they've done in the past
about women and people with disabilities.
Mm.
Council on the Ageing, what sort of leverage are you getting, do you think, Ian? And who's on your council with you?
Well, the councils on the ageing are at a federation throughout Australia. There's one in Victoria, a quite large operation, running both policy and lobbying on state and federal governments, but also a wide range of programs that involve older Australians. We get good access in the federal government. The TUN report, for example, that you talked about in terms of aged care, reflects many of our policies, and we are confident that over the next year or so we'll get government to implement the bulk of those. Certainly we would encourage people to get involved in what CODA is doing and support it, because that everybody's contribution helps in this process.
How can they do that, Ian?
Well, they can go to the CODA Victoria website and find out of ways to be involved, either as a member or a volunteer, and contribute to the work that we are doing to deal with the issues that you've raised.
Can we eliminate discrimination, age discrimination in the workplace, do you think, Ian, in the next little while?
It depends what you mean by the next little while, but I do think that this is an important and achievable objective that we ought to be focused on. We've done a great deal of progress in terms of gender discrimination in the workforce. We're not there yet, but certainly the situation is better than it was. And that's the kind of effort that we need to put into age discrimination.
I agree.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much indeed for your time, Ian Yates, who is the Chief Executive of Council of Ageing here in Australia. We appreciate your time on the Age Stage. And just to remind you, Ian, that we're batting away down here on behalf of older Australians in the Age Stage. We think it's unique and a very special program being put together by a demographic pretty close to that you represent. And we hope that we can get some traction nationally, and maybe you give us a listen from time to time.
Absolutely. I'm very pleased to see what you're doing.
David.
Thank you.
Ian, thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, Paula, that just about wraps up another interesting week here on the Age Stage. A lot to look forward to. Of course, we welcome back Peter. We had Kim in with us as well. Mm. And then, of course, we had Ian on the line as well. Interesting, this age discrimination thing. I think Coda's got some work cut out there.
Absolutely, definitely.
I was saying to Ian, we see it on a pretty regular basis as well.
So much talent just seems to go to waste, you know. It can only be used in voluntary situations because people won't pay for it.
It's tragic. Yeah. And don't forget, a reminder what Dr. David Sykes was telling us about the big conference tonight at the Conference Centre. You can go along and find out the very latest on what is happening in terms of dementia and Alzheimer's in particular here in Australia and internationally as well. All you got to do is roll up at 7:30 tonight and the doors will be flung open and the red carpet will be rolled out for you.
Mm. We had one of those down at Mornington at the library, actually, last year. I went along and had a listen, and it was fascinating, totally
indeed.
Fascinating.
We will be rolling out the red carpet for all of you next time when we join you on the Age Stage. That's going to be at the same time next week. Until then, I'm Brendan Telfer.
I'm Paula Dunn.
Thank you very much indeed for listening. We'll see you then.